seated. We will now have the main message, the sermon presented to us by Elder of Ann Arbor and Detroit congregations, Mr. Gary Weckerly.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's kind of interesting just sitting in the back and looking around, and all of a sudden my eyes fell upon Mr. Kellerman. And I was sitting there watching, and I'm watching his daughter, and his daughter's going every single word on it. I'm going, she's going to be a singer one of these days. I think it runs in the family. But it was really, really heartwarming. I remember when our kids were small and we went through the same kind of things, and it brought back a lot of good memories when you see that. Soon, we will be celebrating a national holiday, and I think everyone in here is kind of looking forward to it. The Day of Thanksgiving. Do we truly understand why we will be giving thanks? Or is it just a ritual like so many do in this world today? Year after year, at a certain time of the year, they get together in groups. Is it just a ritual? Is it just the idea of getting together and serving a lavish dinner? You know, if you have a big group at your house, sometimes you look forward to having it. Sometimes you're kind of glad when it's over. And then you're really happy when the mess is all cleaned up because it turns out to be a lot of work. But it's something that we do. Serving turkey, dressing, potatoes, green beans, maybe green beans with almond in, cranberry sauce, pumpkin pie. I just heard out today about pumpkin ice cream. I'm sitting there going, well, that sounds pretty good. And somebody was telling how it was going to be served, and I'm going, you know, the next potluck? I'm thinking that this individual could supply some of that. But anyhow, pumpkin pie, ice cream, and of course, drinks. This is very little thought that God goes into what is happening today. I can remember when we were small, as small children, we had Thanksgiving, and there was very little thought given to what it meant. It was just a time of the year in our family that we got together and kind of, quote-unquote, partied. And that's what we did. There was an article on the internet titled Origin of Thanksgiving, in which there were some facts that you may not know about. I certainly didn't know about it. On how Thanksgiving was originally brought about on this day. Today, Thanksgiving should mean more to those who believe in God than just a turkey dinner. We should have a deeper feeling. It should be more than just having a turkey dinner, watching football, which I know some of us, including this one, will definitely be in front of the tube watching some of the football, but a football and having a party with friends. This day began when the first pilgrims came to America and invited their neighbors who were Indians to join them. Now, generally, it's not a tradition, I don't think for many of us, it may be for some of us, to ask your neighbor to join you for a Thanksgiving dinner because everybody is out doing their own things or getting together with their own friends or their own family. But in this case, they asked their neighbors to join them, to join them for a meal. It was the fall of 1620 when a group of pilgrims decided to leave their country because of oppression. We can remember things like that in the past as we've been taught in the church. They left because of oppression, and so they crossed the Atlantic, which proved to be a very difficult task. Now, if you've ever been in a boat of any sizable body of water and it's been kind of rough seas, you know it can be a difficult thing because a lot of people, you know, they kind of get that old seasickness and thing going and they're not feeling good. But it can be a difficult time. For 2 months, 102 people were living in cargo space of a boat which only had about 5.5 feet of headspace. Now think about that. You've got 5.5 feet. Now maybe there are shorter people back then. I don't know. Maybe there are some that are 5.5, maybe some were 6 foot. All they had was 5.5 feet of clearance for head. The ceiling of the cargo ship was the floor of the main deck. So they're right under that main deck when all the activity is taking place up on top. No one was allowed to be on the main deck except the crew because of the terrific storms that they were going through. So it's not like being on one of these big ocean liners that you see people get on and they go out and they're gone for 2 or 3 days and they're enjoying the sun and they're rock climbing and all the wonderful things and amenities that they have on the boat. That's not the case here. It was amazing that only one person lost their life on this voyage across the Atlantic. That seems almost a miracle. Can you imagine the living conditions? The Mayflower was not that big of a ship. It was between 90 and 100 feet long. So I'm not sure what the distance is from here to there, but it's probably close to 90 or 100 feet, if I was going to guess at it, or maybe it should be a little smaller. 90 to 100 feet and only 25 feet wide. So that's 2,500 square feet, 102 people. Do the math. 102 people, 2,500 square feet, each person had a 5 foot by 5 foot square for 2 months. That was their space. Now, I'm sure that they probably huddled together to stay warm and things like that, and there was, maybe they were stacked up in their 5 foot height. Maybe they were allowed 2 feet or something for sleeping quarters, but still, they did not have a lot of space. Just think of the sanitary conditions that they had to go through. What if a lot of them got sick and they had to deal with all that? It was not a pleasant ride going across the Atlantic for 2 long months. It should be interesting to note that God was working with these people by providing protection that they may not have been aware of. In fact, I would guess, as I was reading through it, they had no clue as to what was taking place. They had no clue. In this article, it says, and I quote, "A little known fact about the Mayflower is that the ship normally carried a cargo of wine. That was its mainstay. There were several ships that crossed over back and forth to different places, but this particular ship, the main cargo, was wine. And the wine spillage from the previous voyages had soaked the beams, acting as a disinfectant to prevent the spread of disease." Think about that. You get in a boat, everybody's getting on it, and you've already got some protection taking place. You can imagine if anybody got sick in those kind of tight quarters, how fast it would spread. It wouldn't take long. The only one to die in a voyage was the one paid crew member who chastised the pilgrims while they were comforting themselves singing songs. He tried to make them shut up. He tried to kill the joy that they were celebrating to themselves, getting away from a land that they were oppressed and going to some place that was free. And here this guy is the only one that died. Another thing that happened to them on the voyage was during the terrible storms, the main beam of the mast cracked. Now, I'm sure all of you have seen sail ships or ships that sail travel with sails, and the main mast is kind of a key item. You know, it's really key. If you haven't got this, it's like you haven't got anything. So here we are with a crack. They needed this beam to support the sails so the ship would move across the sea. Without this beam, death would have most likely been certain for all of them. They would have had no place to go. They just would have been out there. However, and just think about this, 102 people. However, one of the pilgrims had brought a rather large screw. Why would he do that? You know, why would he do that? Brought a rather large screw that was for a printing press, and this screw was put into the beam, and it held the mast together. One screw. I'm sitting there going, oh, come on. They couldn't have planned this any better. You couldn't write a story like this. So God certainly was with them. I want to quote another part of the article that shows that God still was protecting them when they reached land. After 66 days at sea, land was sighted off what is now Cape Cod, Massachusetts. But that was not where the pilgrims wanted to be. They had intended to establish their new colony in the northern parts of Virginia, which then extended to the Hudson River in modern-day New York. But two factors interrupted their plans. The winds had blown them off course. I wonder who had a little push on that one. The winds had blown them off course. But they also learned that some other Englishmen who wanted to settle in the same northern part of Virginia had bribed the crew and asked them not to land there, but to land them someplace else. He didn't want them in that part. He wanted them someplace else. Once again, God was in charge. The pilgrims were right where God wanted them to be. Had they actually landed near the Hudson River, they would have most certainly been attacked by hostile Indians. because the area they had picked was not a very good area for them to land. Instead, there were no Indians on Cape Cod, and when the Pilgrims made landfall there, they were safe. Amazing. There's a parallel with this with Israel back in Egypt. They wanted to leave a country they lived because of what? Because of the oppression that they were going through. Let's turn over to the book of Exodus in chapter 8. Book of Exodus in chapter 8. It says, "Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, 'Entreat the Lord that he may take away the frogs from me and from my people.'" I'm thinking, I got a wrong one. Let's go to Exodus 1. Sorry about that. Exodus 1, verse 8. I figured out where Wayne, it was Proverbs and not Psalms. It's easy to do that, though. It's easy to pick the wrong guy here. Exodus 1 and verse 8. It says, "Now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, 'Look, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we.'" So they got somebody in their land and they're really trying to, they're really getting concerned over what's taking place. He says, "Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply. And it happened in the event of a war that they also join our enemies and fight against us and so go up out of the land. Therefore, they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with their burdens. And they built for Pharaoh supply cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. And they were in dread of the children of Israel." They were becoming afraid of them. They really thought that they were getting unbelievably strong. In verse 13, "So the Egyptians made the children of Israel serve with rigor." Not a very nice life. How would you like to have a taskmaster over you, telling you what to do, when you can do it, how you can do it? It's like being in prison and being in a chain gang. You know, those kinds of things. You serve with rigor. In verse 14, "And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar and brick and in all manner of service in the field. All their service in which they made them serve was with rigor." So they had a lifestyle that they certainly wanted to get out of. Life was not very pleasant. They were living in hard times. God heard their cry and sent Moses to deliver his people. Unlike the 66-day trial of the pilgrims, the Israelites had their own trial to reach freedom. They witnessed the 10 plagues leading up to the release and the miracles in helping them escape into the wilderness. God had a plan, just like he helped the pilgrims go through theirs. They had to go through certain things on that trip coming over from London, coming over from England, until they got here in the United States. Israel had to go through certain things. God led them so that everyone would know it was God who was providing the way of escape. There could be no misunderstanding with what they were going through. Let's turn over to Exodus chapter 13. Exodus 13 and just a couple of verses. Verse 21. It says, "And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and night. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people." Now, if you were in that camp and you were traveling, I think you would certainly see what was going on. You could see this for miles and miles and miles. You would know. God was with his people, watching over them, just as he was guiding the pilgrims. It was God who chose the point at which they would enter the wilderness, and they would never see the oppression from the Egyptians again. He picked the place, just like he picked the place for the pilgrims to land. It wasn't their choice. Exodus 14 and verse 21. "Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea into dry land, and the waters that were divided. And so the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on the dry ground, but the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left hand." Now I know that there's many in this room, including me, that have been in lakes. I've been in oceans. I've been in some streams and rivers. And when you step down into the water, what happens? Your foot sinks into the muck. It goes down in. And sometimes when you go in lakes that are a little muckier, you'd say, well, you might sink a little deeper. So here we have God opening it up and drying the land. That must have been one terrific wind to be able to dry the land so that people could walk along it. If you had a mud pie out in your backyard and winds were blowing all day long and you go out there the next day, it's still part of a mud pie because it hasn't dried clean through. And if you step in it, you're going to sink. That's not what happened. God dried it sufficiently so that they could travel over it. In verse 23, and the Egyptians pursued and went after them into the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots and his horsemen. Now it came to pass in the morning that the Lord looked down upon the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and cloud, and he troubled the army of the Egyptians. He took off the chariot wheels. He took it off. He slowed them down. You ever drive your car over a bumpy road with flat tires? It doesn't work so well. You know, you can't go very fast, or it tosses you out. So it's a difficult travel. So he slowed them down. The Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea, and the waters may come back upon the Egyptians on their chariots and their horsemen. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and when the morning appeared, the sea returned in its full depth, while the Egyptians were fleeing into it. And so the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. And I've heard people talking about this story, and they talk about, well, it really wasn't that big of a body of water. They crossed the sea, but it was kind of toward the shore. That's not what the Bible tells us. The Bible tells us that they had this huge wall of water on both sides of them. It wasn't just 2 feet or 3 feet or whatever people want to think it is. Verse 28, then the waters returned and covered the chariots, the horsemen, and all the army of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. Not so much as one of them returned. You know, God showed Israel his power. He took care of their battles. Not even a shot was, he just covered them over with water. That was the end of it. In verse 20, but the children of Israel had walked on dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall to them on the right hand and on the left. So the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on this shore. The Israel saw the great work which the Lord had done in Egypt, so the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. Israel crossed through the Red Sea and escaped their oppression, just as the pilgrims crossed the sea to freedom and landed where God wanted them to be. Moses was only one man, and God had picked him to teach his ways to the children of Israel. It was during this time that the children of Israel complained against Moses and God. What happened to them? They started this complaining. God would perform a miracle, and it would only provide a temporary relief to the complaints rendered by the children of Israel. How many miracles has God provided in our lives? Is it only temporary, or is it long-lasting? Are we thankful for it? Even when these miracles were very visual, the children of Israel soon forgot what God had done for them. If you were with them, and you traveled through the Red Sea, I would like to think that you would really remember that experience. I would like to think that you absolutely 100% would never doubt again God's power and that you would serve him. I would like to think that. But the Bible tells us and shows us that human beings don't seem to have that capability. They forget. They were not thankful. They had an attitude of being ungrateful for all God had done for them. They forgot about it. They forgot the crossing the Red Sea. They forgot God leading them by a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. They forgot God providing water from a rock when they were thirsty. How many rocks can you go up to and tap and have water automatically flow out of them? That's kind of a strong task. They forgot God providing manna from heaven when they were hungry. He fed them. And all these were very visual miracles. Should have been frontlets in their minds. One would think they would never forget, but they did. In quoting another passage from the article origin of Thanksgiving, which shows God was still watching out for the pilgrims, it says, despite the provisions of safety from the Indians, and the Indians did help the pilgrims during that first winter, the pilgrims barely survived their first winter on the Cape. It's anticipated that they lost almost half of their people, 102, there's like 53 that survived. That's a lot of people to lose just within 4 or 5 months of a period of time there. Only 4 families escaped without burying at least 1 family member. How do you like those odds? After crossing the ocean and losing no one in the 102, yet they get over there and then they run through this. But God was still faithful. In the spring in 1621, he sent Squanto. Did you ever hear of Squanto? One shaking their head. I didn't hear of Squanto. I didn't know who he was. Again, you got to wonder, what are the odds? Sent Squanto, the Indian who could speak their own language. Figure that one out. Speak their own language. Here they come to a straight country, and they find somebody shows up, knocks on their door, and says, "Hi, how are you?" Speaking in your own language. Speaking their own language, and who offered to teach them how to survive in the strange new land. Here they are in a strange new land, 53 left, and here comes Squanto. What are the odds of this happening? In my mind, slim to none. I'm thinking, God showed Squanto where he needed to be. Squanto was one of a few Indians from the area who had not died of the plague. So they had a plague that went through their area when he was a young boy. He had been captured as a young man and taken to England as a slave. During that time, he mastered the English language. As a slave, he taught himself. And then he had been freed and returned to his native territory shortly before the pilgrims arrived. What timing? God does everything in the right time. And here comes Squanto. Probably the most important thing Squanto taught the pilgrims was how to plant the Indians' winter crop, corn. Their winter crop. The pilgrims thanked God for this wonderful helper, but they also shared with Squanto the most valuable treasure that they had brought with them from England. Any guesses on the most wonderful? The gospel. That was their most prized possession that they brought, was the gospel. Squanto died within a year or two after coming to the aid of the pilgrims. But before his death, he asked them to pray for him that he might go to be with their God in heaven. So he had changed the ways of what the Indians did and had moved toward God. Other Indians who Squanto had introduced to the pilgrims were also impressed with their God. During the summer of 1621, when it appeared the year's corn harvest would not survive a severe drought, the pilgrims called for a day of fasting and prayer. Where did they go for help? They went right to God. Fasting and prayer. And the pilgrims called for a day of fasting and prayer. They did not forget God in their time of need. By the end of the day, it was raining, and the rain saved the corn, which miraculously sprang back to life. We've seen a lot of droughts in the country. There's been a lot of things that we've seen in Texas and some of the other parts of the country. And when it gets so bad and rain comes, it doesn't help the crops because the damage is already done. And here we have this rain come, and it made a difference. One of the Indians who observed this miracle remarked that their God must be a very great God, because when the Indians powwowed for rain, it always rained so hard that the corn stalks were broken down. They never got this light, drizzling rain that was required. But they noticed that the pilgrims' God had sent a very gentle rain that did not damage the corn harvest. Amazing. It was the same miraculous corn harvest that provided the grain for the pilgrims' first Thanksgiving meal with their Indian friends and helpers. And here we have God involved in their lives. The pilgrims did not forget what God did for them, and every year they set aside a day to be thankful for what God had done for them. In an article posted on the internet titled "The Thanksgiving Turkey," it tells the story of eating turkey on Thanksgiving. I always wondered where this tradition came from. I quote, "A turkey is a big domestic bird that is native to North America. It has white plumage and a bare neck and a head with a wattle on it. The turkey features are brown and some color on its tail and tips of its wings. The name turkey was given to the bird because it was thought that they had the origin from turkey. That's just not true. That's just a rumor. This is not true, though. The wild turkey is actually a staple food in the diet of most North Americans. Quite a few of these domesticated turkeys were actually brought to North America by the Pilgrims in 1620. So they were on the boat, making their voyage as well. After their arrival, Wampanoag Indian tribe introduced the wild turkey to the Pilgrims. And in 1621, the Pilgrims celebrated their first Thanksgiving with the Indian tribe. In fact, the Indians were the Pilgrims' guest of honor at the dinner. While there is no hard evidence, it is believed that the turkey was eaten at this celebration, which kind of makes sense. Turkey has always been associated with Thanksgiving. In fact, turkey is actually a very important part of the Thanksgiving dinner menu. This is why Thanksgiving Day has also been called Turkey Day. And I've heard that a lot as well. As we look back on our lives, do we fall into the category of the Israelites in the wilderness? Or do we fall into the category of the Pilgrims and remember what God has done for us? Which category do we fall into? There are many examples in the Bible giving thanks or being thankful. I have 5 points of categories in which thanks was given. This is what you might call the short list, and it's just the tip of the iceberg. And it's just some thoughts that I had been given and was researching some stuff, and I'm sure that you can come up with hundreds of more. Point number one would be that we should be giving thanks to God. We should be including God in our Thanksgiving Day. Let's go to Psalms 100. Psalms 100 in verse 4. Enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. Be thankful to him and bless his name. Be thankful to God. God says we are to come before him with thanksgiving, not to come before him sad, not to come before him down in the dumps, but to come before him with thanksgiving. We are to be thankful to him. He is ultimately our provider, and we should never forget it. And that's something Israel did. They forgot it. Let's turn over to Hebrews chapter 13. Hebrews chapter 13, picking it up in verse 12. Therefore, Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered outside the gate. He was outside the city, in other words. Therefore, let us go forth to him outside the camp, bearing his reproach. For here we have no continuing city, but we seek the one to come. Therefore, by him, let us continually offer the sacrifice of praise to God, that is, the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. Giving thanks to his name. Thanks to God. We are giving thanks to God, and he sees it as fruit coming from our lips. He looks at it as something sweet, something that tastes good, and is something that he desires of us daily, not just once a year, but daily. Point number two, we should be giving thanks for everything, and I mean everything, whether it is good times or troubled times. There's a reason for what we go through. Let's turn over to Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 5, beginning in verse 14. It says, therefore, he says, awake, you who sleep, arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And do not be drunk with the wine in which is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. That's what the pilgrims were doing as they were traveling across the water. They were singing songs and they were praising God, singing and making melody in your hearts to the Lord. Verse 20, giving thanks always for all things, not just some things, but for all things to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. To all things. We are to be thankful. Everything that we encounter in this life that God has set before us, whether it's good times or bad times, and I'm sure all of us have experienced both. Let's turn over to 1 Thessalonians. First Thessalonians chapter 5, beginning in verse 16. It says, rejoice always, pray without ceasing, in everything give thanks, for this is what? This is the will of God in Jesus Christ. This is the will of God our Father. Christ said he came to do the will of the Father. He also said that he came to set an example for us that we should follow in his ways. It is the will of the Father that we give thanks for everything and not just some things. James chapter 1. Chapter 1, beginning in verse 2. It says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. We all have trials. Some of them are more difficult than others, but we all have trials. Knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience, but let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete and lack nothing. We are to be thankful in everything. When we go through trials, we count it all joy, or being thankful, because we know the end result will be to the glory of God. In other words, we should be thankful to him because he's taking the time to teach us. We go through trials because there's a lesson for us to learn. Either we fell down somewhere, or maybe we're lacking something, and God wants to teach us something. And we're going through these trials for the edification of our bodies and our minds and our souls, that we can be more righteous to God. 3, we should be thankful to God for the reward that is at hand, a reward so great that we as human beings simply cannot comprehend the magnificence of it. We should be thanking God. Let's turn over to Colossians chapter 1. Colossians chapter 1, beginning in verse 9, it says, for this reason we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that you may walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing him, being fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God, strengthening with all might according to his glorious power for all patience and long-suffering with joy, giving thanks to the Father who has qualified us to be partakers of his inheritance of the saints in the light. The gift will be the inheritance. We are to give thanks to God because he is qualifying us to be partakers of this inheritance. We need to walk in a worthy manner, pleasing God and being fruitful in every good work. We're not just to sit by. We are to do good work. And one of the good works that we just recently did as a church is we provided some meals to some people who didn't have food for this Thanksgiving. And we provided a lot of meals in our small group. And it was very encouraging to see that happen. But that's part of the good works. God looks down upon us and say, hey, my people are willing to share. In all that we do on this earth, we should strive to please God to the best of our abilities. And I know that all of us fall short. And that's everyone. It's not just one person. 4, we should be thankful to God with our mouth and our actions. With our mouth and our actions. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 17. It says, "And whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him." Whatever you do in word or deed. We should be thankful to God for teaching us just how we should conduct our lives in this world. Everyone that has come into the church and stayed in the church has learned the principles is different than the way the world lives. We are all different. We truly are different if we conduct ourselves accordingly, and people around us will look at us and they'll talk to us and they will know that we are different. They will know that we are being taught a different way of life. And that's coming from God in Jesus Christ. So through our speech and our actions. 5, we should be giving thanks for others for helping us, understanding something that we may need help with, for being there just to listen as a friend, or for those who pray for us in a time of need. And there's a lot of people, when we send out prayer requests, when we get prayers and cards from all over the world, it isn't just from our little group here in Detroit. But it's nice and comforting to know that the group in Detroit, that we pray for each other. Paul set a good example for us to follow. Let's turn to 2 Corinthians in chapter 1. Verse 3 says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in our tribulations, that we be able to comfort those who are in any trouble with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted." You know, there's a lot of us that have gone through trials, specific trials, and when somebody else we know is going through a very similar trial, we have a special ability because we can internalize what they're going through. And sometimes we can really be a help in lifting their spirits on what they're going through. And it can be helpful. And so we look out for one another. 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 8 says, "For we do not want to be ignorant, brethren, of our trouble which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened beyond measure, beyond strength, so that we despaired even of life. Yes, we had the sentence of death in ourselves, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raised the dead, who delivered us from so great a death that does deliver us, in whom we trust that he will still deliver us. You also helping together in prayer for us." Here he's thanking people for prayer, for them, in prayer for us, that thanks may be given by many persons on our behalf for the gift granted to us through many. Paul was thankful for the prayers of many on his behalf. During this Thanksgiving, let us not be like the Israelites and remember what God has done for us and give thanks to God. Think back about the miracles that God has performed in your life over the years. The miracle of your calling, maybe the miracle of saving your life because of an accident, the avoidance of an accident, whatever it might be, maybe a miraculous healing. Maybe you had to go through a difficult time and you provided patience and peace. Whatever it takes, let's not forget to thank God. Thank him personally for who he is, keeping in your front thoughts. Thank him for everything that we have. Everything that we have belongs to him. We have to come to understand that. Everything that we have, no matter how much or how little, belongs to him. Thank him for the promise of our inheritance. You know, that's an awesome, awesome promise. And that's what we all look forward to, each and every one of us. That's why we're here. We're here to follow God. We're here so that we can partake in part of that inheritance. Thank him through our speech and our actions. And this church does stand up. We see that at the feast, when we go to the feast, we see a lot of people that all of a sudden jump in and they do things and they help when things are needed for help, and they help people that need a little extra hand. You see it during the feast. It was interesting, at the feast in Maui, there was a group that came from Australia, and they camped, 25 people. That's the only way that they could go as a group, is if they went by plane, and they lived in probably tents, but they lived in a campground that had hot and cold running waters and the bathrooms and everything. But they camped. And in talking to them, they were very, very happy and thankful for the privilege of attending the feast. They were grateful. So through our speech and our actions, and thank Him for all those who help us in our time of need. People that just come out of the woodwork. That wouldn't come out right. Come out of the woodwork. and just pitch in, and they help. We, above all people on this earth, should really have an appreciation for what God has done for us. We should truly understand that God has ownership of everything and everything that we have, and we only have it to use because of His blessings on us. We need to remember that. This day of Thanksgiving is a day that this world should show its appreciation for the many blessings of God. But unfortunately, that's not the way it will be in the world. But it will be with us. While it is not in the Bible, the principles by it is not in the Bible the day of Thanksgiving, the principles by which we live on the day of Thanksgiving is very much in the Bible. Remember, be thankful for all that you have, because it's from God. And may everyone have a very wonderful day of Thanksgiving.